Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Option, if successful, will turn the Senate into a body that could have its rules broken at any time by a majority of senators unhappy with any position taken by the minority.
You just heard Senator Shopping Cart Feinstein speaking back in 2005. I can turn the music off. It doesn't work. You just heard Senator Shopping Cart Feinstein saying back in 2005 when the Dems were the minority that if reconciliation were to be used by the Republicans, it would turn the Senate into, a dictatorship. Now, of course, you've got to hear the rest of this. We are talking about the maneuver where the other party is locked out of the vote and we live in a putative dictatorship. And the party in power simply does what it wants without respect to the other party, let alone what the people want. I mean, let's put aside the fact that the people don't want this at all, the health care bill, and I've told you the reasons why. But now you have Obama and the Marxist Democrats in power, and they're going to use the technique called reconciliation, which, of course, the libs are jumping up and down for and saying, we need it, we want it, we have to have it, do it, do it, do it. Of course, they were singing a different tune when they were the minority, saying it was a dictatorship. So let's begin at the top with Obama and run our way right down to Biden. Listen to the Savage Nation.
What I worry about would be that you essentially have still two chambers, the House and the Senate, but you have simply majoritarian absolute power on either side. And that's just not what the founders intended.
We are on the precipice of a crisis, a constitutional crisis. The checks and balances which have been at the core of this republic are about to be evaporated by the nuclear option. The checks and balances which say that if you get 51% of the vote, you don't get your way 100% of the time. It is amazing. It's almost a temper tantrum.
The nuclear option, if successful, will turn the Senate into a body that could have its rules broken at any time by a majority of senators unhappy with any position taken by the minority.
This nuclear option is ultimately an example of the arrogance of power. It is a fundamental power grab.
We are not going to follow the Senate rules. No. Because of the arrogance of power of this Republican administration.
I say to my friends on the Republican side, you may own the field right now, but you won't own it forever. And I pray God, when the Democrats take back control, we don't make the kind of naked power grab you are doing.
You don't try this naked power grab. Well, I rest my case. Now, you could call it naked hypocrisy, but what would that get you with politicians? And so you can just say that the Democrats were lying then, and so are they lying now about health care for the poor? In other words, if they were lying then about not using reconciliation, are they not lying to you now about health care reform? I mean, when did they stop lying and when did they start lying? This is the Savage Nation. Welcome to the program. We can start all over again. Play There Goes My Baby. Then we'll talk about Megan McShame, the daughter of John McShame, who is attacking tea parties today. I don't know why I picked that song. It doesn't fit a damn thing. I have an idea. Wait. Here's a fun one. Here's Megan McShame, who is channeling her father. Actually, I think that John McCain McShame is channeling his daughter. I don't really know who's channeling who. She goes on a show with Whoopi Cushion Goldberg, and the other fetid fruit from the forest floor. And she starts to attack the Tea Party and calls anyone in the Tea Party fundamentally racist. Listen to clip 14.
There are some things about the Tea Party that have been bugging you.
People were saying that this is the new movement in the Republican Party. And the first, I knew, I did not want to go. I had very different, much ideological differences with them. But Congressman Tancredo went on TV, and he was the first opening speaker, and he said that people who could not even spell the word vote or say it in English put a committed socialist ideologue in the White House whose name is Barack Hussein Obama. And then he went on to say that people at the convention should have to pass literacy tests in order to be able to vote in this country, which is the same thing that happened in the 50s to prevent African Americans from voting. And this, it's innate racism. And I think it's why young people are turned off by this movement. And I'm sorry, revolutions start with young people, not with 65-year-old people talking about literacy tests and people who can't say the word vote in English.
Now, I don't know whether this is a product of congenital stupidity inherited from the mother. You do know the mother, McCain, was a Valley of the Dolls. I mean, look, you want to lay it on the line here? You want to get down and dirty? You think I'm going to hold it back because she's a woman? You think I'm going to hold it back because she's a young person? You're wrong. Anyone who calls the Tea Party movement an innately racist because they want people to be able to read, write, and speak English is going to get it from me. Meghan McShane is exactly what is wrong with John McCain and exactly what's wrong with the Republican Party, in my opinion. Now, I'm not asking you to comment, because there's nothing you can say that would add to this discussion. I just felt like getting it off my chest. That's all. I am not in a good mood today. I had a great time yesterday talking about cafeteria workers and tomato soup. I don't know how we got into that, but we're going to replay that because everybody wants to hear it again. We also have sound of George Soros, the puppeteer behind Obama, who says that free market capitalism is bankrupt. We then have the naked communist of the Service Employees Union International, Andy Stern, calling for the redistribution of wealth. Incidentally, Mr. Stern was the most frequent visitor to the White House last year. So when I say that Obama is a naked Marxist, and then you see that Andy Stern, who calls for the redistribution of wealth, and he's the head of the union, the SEIU, then you understand why I'm right. Well, we have other stuff to talk about today. I'm just angry because last night I went to my... I'm never going to this Chinese restaurant again. I know the name of the Chinese restaurant because I've eaten there for 20 years. But I'm never going there again. It's not just that you risk your life crossing the street to get to that hellhole. But the guy behind the counter has the ugliest, meanest, most horrendous face I've ever seen in a restaurant. I lost my appetite. You know about fight or flight? This guy is the owner. There's two owners. One is nice and one is nasty. When I say nice, that's, of course, a qualified statement. I mean, he's not nasty, but that doesn't mean he's actually nice. He never smiles either. But this is either the brother or the brother-in-law. I actually hate going there when the brother-in-law is there. Remember the old Chuck Norris movies when they would liberate Americans from Vietnam, Vietnamese prison camps with the guard towers? Okay, picture this guy in a guard tower with an AK-47 and a conical hat. Now sit yourself down in a restaurant, and he's staring right at you as you eat. And he looks like he hates you, wants to poison you. There's no reason for you to be here. How dare you come in my restaurant? It is so, I don't know whether it's racist or he's just an evil, mean guy. So the meal was terrible, too. For those of you in San Francisco who go in the area, I am not naming any restaurant by name, but it's, and I wouldn't name it at all, but you know, enough of that. So now let's go back to the callers. New York City, WOR, Steve, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, it's actually Pete, but who's counting? Mike, I think you're a genius, and I voted for this guy. He's a clown. He's inept. He's disingenuous. I really think he's a combination of a Marxist and in the pocket of big healthcare at the same time. What I don't get, though, and I need you to explain it to me, you keep saying that the healthcare bill is socialist, and I've read about 800 pages of it. I don't see it. I see that it's all going to the healthcare companies, and I think he's totally on the take from them.
Well, so it's a complicated question that you raise, so I don't know exactly what you're asking. You're agreeing that putatively you agree he's a Marxist-Leninist. We're not arguing over that. But you're saying the health care grab is not really socialist. You're saying it's more about passing power, at really passing money to his cronies in the health care business. Is that what you're saying?
From my read of it, that's what I see. I see.
Right, well, I'm not going to argue with that, but let me explain something to you that you may not know. I've studied revolutions for over 40 years. There were many different revolutions in many different countries at many different times. Some of them violent, some of them quiet, some of them silent, some of them gradual. If you study, and people don't know this, again, I am not comparing Obama to Hitler, but the tactics that are being used by this revolutionary are very similar to the tactics used in many other revolutions, including that of the Nazi Party in Germany in the early 1930s. Now, what do I mean by that? Is he killing people? No. Is he rounding people up? No. Is he putting them in prison camps? No. That's not what I'm talking about. People don't realize that Hitler came to power as a socialist. You're aware of that, Pete? National socialism means socialism?
I've studied it for many years.
All right, so when you say Hitler was a socialist, the left goes crazy because they would like to believe he was a boogeyman from the right. He was a socialist. Hitler came to power on a pure socialist platform along with some of his street thugs, notably the large, mean, horrible Ernst Röhm, the head of the SA, the brown shirts. Ernst Röhm was with him from the beginning. He was the one who beat people up in the streets. But Ernst Röhm was a diehard socialist. So I'm getting back to answer your question. One of the first things Hitler did in the beginning when he started to get power and people loved him, he started to do favors for the big businesses that supported him in the beginning, the Krupp Steel Manufacturing Company, and many other gigantic German industrialists were rewarded by Hitler because he knew he needed them in his coalition to retain power. So he catered to the rich the same way Obama's catering to Soros and the other power structure, including General Electric. You get it?
So he's a hybrid.
Wait, I'm not finished. There's another paragraph. Who opposed Hitler on this was the purist Ernst Röhm of the SA. They had many arguments. Ernst Röhm said, "We are socialists. You have no right to cater to the capitalists the way you are doing." Eventually, Hitler killed Ernst Röhm in the Night of the Long Knives when he had the SS sneak up on the SA. The SA were on a lake having a bacchanal, a man-to-man bacchanalia on the lake. The SS killed them all except Ernst Röhm, who they took to a prison and then eventually shot him. That's a side note to the Night of the Long Knives. What I'm saying is all dictatorships come to power through many, many different avenues. They don't do it through one demographic, one single demographic, Pete. It's not that they're a hybrid. Obama has his eyes on the prize. He has his eyes on the long prize. He has his eyes on the long march. He has studied well at the in the writings of Mao Zedong and his long march across China. You follow me? This is only a step. And along the way, he must cater to the big business interests in order to retain the power that he has already grabbed. You follow that, Pete?
It's a point that I hadn't really looked at. I'm starting to think that he's the worst president in my lifetime. It's not Bush Light.
We had 8 years of a disaster under the morally corrupt Bill Clinton, who also gave away most of our military secrets to China. Incidentally, I can read you chapter and verse on what Bill Clinton did to our borders. He opened them up to Mexico. Bill Clinton was the beginning of the end of America as we know it. George Bush, while he slowed the process in some ways on a cultural level, he speeded the process up on the level of opening up the borders and giving away secrets to China. He didn't do us any favors. Barack Obama, unless he is stopped on health care and then stopped permanently with all of his other socialist designs, including the granddaddy of them all that will destroy the country forever, which would be granting amnesty to illegal aliens, unless he is stopped on that, the country is dead. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Business Daily, 1-800-449-8255. Any topic is fair game. Of course, now we're talking about, I think the Tea Party is the big question that caught on today, where the mindless dunce, the Paris Hilton of the Republican Party, Meghan McCain, goes on a Whoopi Goldberg show and says that she hates the Tea Party movement because Tancredo wanted a literacy test for voters, which, of course, is long overdue. There should be a literacy test for voters. There should be not only that, there certainly should be a citizenship test for voters. I mean, would you agree with that or not agree with that? And then she goes on and makes the leap that it's racism to say this, which is, of course, absurd. Eugene in Burlington, Vermont, go ahead. You're up on the Savage Nation.
You know, but, Michael, I agree with her completely. In fact, I have firsthand knowledge that the Tea Party is has racist involvement. And when I was...
Let's stop. You're going to want a discussion on this. Please define racism.
Well, okay, I'll define it for you perfectly. When I was home recently, I was out visiting some of my old friends and out of my...
Can you please define... I don't care about your old friends. I want you to define racism.
Well, they were both Tea Partiers and had attended Tea Party rallies, and then they both asked me, Eugene, how can you vote for that bleeping bleeper? And they didn't, and the bleeping bleeper...
So in other words, because you have racist friends, you're now assuming that everyone in a Tea Party movement is like your friends?
What I'm assuming, Michael...
I think it's more of a statement about you and your friends than it is about the Tea Party movement.
When I look at the Tea Party movement, when I see people holding signs with pictures of Obama depicted as a monkey, I see racism. I'm sorry.
Oh, wait, hold on now. So again, you're focusing on your friends. You're focusing on one picture of Obama in that manner. You're still not defining what racism is. What is racism? Please define it, Eugene. You're throwing it around like you know what it is. So tell us what it is.
Racism is inherent distaste for a person because of his skin color. And
Hold on. Don't get hysterical now. Try to control yourself. So by your definition, would the Congressional Black Caucus be racist?
No.
Wait, would the La Raza be racist?
No.
Would the NAACP be racist? I mean, they all exclude white people. Why do they exclude people of Caucasian origin if they're not racist?
Because they're not doing that. That's your opinion, Michael, and I think your opinion...
Wait. You mean there are white people in La Raza and in the NAACP? Where?
There's no white people.
You've been smoking too much cannabis, Buster. You just lost on every front. And that's why you're hiding up in Vermont with racists of the lowest ilk. And you have defined your friends more than you defined the Tea Party movement, Buster.
Savage.
Be a party for a 24-year-old pro-sex woman. It can be. I just think that we have people that are in this party that are hijacking and trying to make it even more extreme.
Megan McShane saying she's a pro-sex woman and that the party's being hijacked by people trying to make it more extreme. More extreme than who? You? More extreme than your father? What, are you crazy? I mean, it's sad to watch this idiot child being used by leftists like these passe, I mean, Whoopi Goldberg. I mean, look who she's talking to. That woman wasn't funny when she was supposedly funny, and she's still on television for one reason and one reason only. Okay? You want me to spell it out for you? Oklahoma City, Mark, welcome to the Savage Nation.
How you doing, Mike? Look, Mike, I kind of disagree with some of the people who are trying to compare Obama with FDR in a negative way for FDR. FDR saved his country. He saved his country from, being overrun by the Nazis and the Japanese. He also...
It's a big story. There's a mixed bag with FDR. Even people who support him who are really intellectual and have studied him in great detail acknowledge that his government centralized government and his centralized planning and his great social expenditures actually prolonged the Depression.
Heard that, but I don't believe it. My father.
I don't care whether you believe it or not. I mean, there are economists who know more than you do who do believe it.
Their proof is that
European nations who went into the Depression at the same time as the U.S. came out of it 4 or 5 years earlier because they did not intervene in markets the same way FDR did.
Didn't FDR bring a lot of social safety nets such as unemployment insurance?
But you're not hearing me. You're not hearing me. European nations that went into the worldwide depression at the same time as the U.S. came out of it sooner because they did not rely to the same extent that the FDR did upon vast amounts of spending such as TARP and stimulus funds, which is what Obama's copying. Obama's trying to copy the FDR thing of just throw money at the problem. And what I'm saying is it actually prolonged the Depression, which is not to say that there weren't some things that FDR did that were valid.
I mean, he did stand up to Hitler. You got to admit that. He stood up to the Japanese. And I'm not sure.
No one's denying that. He certainly did, but it wasn't he alone. It was all the American families who lost sons and husbands and fathers and uncles who stood up to Hitler and the Japanese. So, you know, we understand that. What you're saying is at least he was willing to fight. That's what you're saying.
And how?
Now, do you, since you brought up FDR, do you believe he actually knew Pearl Harbor was coming and he didn't do anything in order to get America into war?
No. I'll tell you why I don't believe it. If that was the case, he would have left. We lost our whole Pacific fleet. And he didn't. I know a lot of people say, well, the.
Wait a minute. We didn't leave our whole Pacific. Wait, you're wrong on that again, Mark. I'm sorry. You don't have all your facts. He did not leave the whole Pacific Fleet at Pearl Harbor. The aircraft carriers were out to sea. The Japanese were shocked that they only got the battleships and the heavy cruisers. They meant to take out the aircraft carriers in order to dominate the Pacific Ocean. That's why they eventually lost, because our aircraft carriers were not in Pearl Harbor. Now, you could say to yourself, wouldn't that indicate that FDR did know that they were coming, and he ordered the Pacific Fleet to take the carriers out?
No, I'll tell you why. Because I believe that we didn't quite understand the importance of aircraft carriers yet at that point. Remember, aircraft carriers were barely even used in the Pacific, except by the British were the only ones, I believe, that had them. I don't even think the Germans had
them. Well, all right. Now we're talking in circles. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it very much. 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com. Where do we go from here? A blizzard of lies from Al Gore, Investor's Business Daily. Climate fraud. Al Gore resurfaces in an op-ed to say that nobody's perfect. Everybody makes mistakes. And climate change is still real. And he has some oceanfront property in the Himalayas to sell you. If hyperbole and chutzpah had a child, it would be the opening paragraph of Gore's op-ed in Sunday's NYT, New York Times. Gore surfaced from the Global Warming Witness Protection Program to opine that despite admissions of error and evidence of fraud by various agencies, we still face, quote, an unimaginable calamity requiring large-scale preventive measures to protect human or civilization as we know it, close quote. They say perhaps Gore is trying to protect his own investments as he knows them, for Gore is heavily involved in enterprises that deal with carbon offsets and green technology. And then he goes on to say that the blizzards that we are seeing is caused by global warming. That's what he says now. So then they say, so global warming simultaneously causes mountain snow to vanish and Himalayan glaciers to melt, while blanketing the northeastern United States with snowfalls measured in feet. Clearly, this is an untenable position. One phenomenon cannot simultaneously produce two different results. Gore then speaks of recent attacks on the science of global warming. Attacks? I guess these include the unearthing of emails between researchers associated with Britain's so-called climactic research unit. Climactic research unit? They should be, you know, maybe they could... Once they're proven to be total you know, fake artists, they can turn it into an orgasm studying unit. When you think about it, they can keep the title, keep the letterheads. Britain's climactic research unit can go from global warming to studying orgasms. They're revealed in effort to discredit skeptics and deny them peer review. Blah blah blah. CRU director Phil Jones has admitted that temperatures in the Middle Ages may have been even higher than they are today. Did you hear this one? Temperatures in the Middle Ages may have been even higher than they are today, but he hid that data. Why is he not in jail? Why are all the global warming fakers not in prison with their money recovered, their property sold? Huh? Why are they not in prison? If you cooked books like that in your company, the IRS would put you in jail. Don't you think so? Iranian spiritual leader says Allah wants us to have nukes. I warned you about these throwbacks with beards, these little mullahs. Iranian spiritual leader says Allah wants us to have nukes. Well, you ought to tell Allah we already have them, Mr. whatever your name is. Tell Allah we already got them. Does that mean it was Allah's will that we got them before you did? And what are they for? Why are you acquiring nuclear weapons? He says acquiring nuclear weapons is a religious obligation. So I guess America's more religious than Iran is, because we've had them since 1945. Wouldn't you say that logic would work? Of course, logic doesn't work on these throwbacks with beards who hate women. New York, Tom, you're on the Savage Nation.
Michael, thank you for doing God's work every day. We're lucky to have you. Michael, I think the health care, more than a power grab, I think the government, with the way they're hemorrhaging, I think they're just trying to capture revenue streams. And I think the three that are left are health care, one-sixth of the economy, the little bit left with wealthy people, and the car industry. If the car industry starts making money, are they going to privatize it and give it back to us, or are they going to retain it?
Well, you're saying a few things at once. We can't generalize like that, because cap and trade will, of course, tax businesses, as you well know. It's cap and tax is what it's all about. But the fact of the matter is healthcare goes after the middle class in order to support not only the rich, who know Nancy Pelosi and Barack Obama and George Soros, but also the people in this country who are non-citizens. Why do I have to keep repeating every day that healthcare is not a right, that healthcare is not a right, that illegal aliens are not citizens, and that illegal aliens have no right to health care? Why do I have to keep repeating this while the Republicans don't say it at all? The reason the Republicans don't say it is they're afraid of losing Hispanic votes, which unto itself is a disgrace. They're no different than Meghan McCain, by the way, in saying that. 1-800-449-8255. New York, Frank, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please. What's on your mind? Frank, go ahead.
I want to put a new spin on Lord Acton. I'm going to tell you that liberalism corrupts, and absolute liberalism corrupts absolutely.
Oh, I see you've been listening to the Savage Nation long enough to know who Lord Acton is.
Yeah, well, I read about him. But look, I want to tell you something funny. There was a local focus group in Philadelphia that held a poll among middle-aged and retired people, and they asked them, when you think of Congress, tell us the first name that comes to mind. So they asked this little retired guy, and he owned, a couple of dealerships years ago, and he tacitly admitted that he had voted for Obama. And his response was, he wrote down Satan. So they asked him, why'd you write down Satan? So he says, because I didn't know the spelling for Beelzebub.
Oh, God, that's cute. Yeah. So you're a very literate man, Frank, that you even know who Beelzebub is.
Well, thank you, Mike. I listened to the Savage Nation. I want you to know something. It was the book that, Paris in the Terror.
My God, that book I mentioned by Stanley, who was it? Stanley, remember I read it? Is that what you heard it on my show about 2 years ago, right?
Absolutely. About Robespierre.
It's a shocking book. How does the French Revolution compare to the Obama Revolution, if at all?
Yep.
Frank, how does the French Revolution under Robespierre compare with what Obama is doing, if at all?
Well, so far we don't have a guillotine in any blood.
There you go. As I said, you got to understand Obama is a gentle revolutionary. Correct, Frank?
Yes, I agree.
So far. But we don't know what he's liable to become when he has absolute power. Reagan's grandson wanted after no show for pot charges. Cameron Reagan, age 31, was pulled over for speeding in Malibu, California, November 9, 2009, when police searched his car and found marijuana. All right, unto itself, the speeding part, the dope. So they pull him over, right? What happens next? You want to hear the rest or not? Well, you want to hear nothing negative about Reagan's grandson. Cameron Reagan was arrested and set to be arraigned on January 8, 2010, but never showed up, so the judge issued a warrant for his arrest. It seems that the young Reagan had a good reason for not appearing in court that day, as he had been arrested a second time the night before his court date for setting off a panic button on the alarm system at his parents' house and reportedly cursing at police. He was taken in for resisting arrest. A Reagan family representative had no comment. On the face of it, you can laugh if you're a liberal, or you can shake your head with sadness if you're a conservative. But at the end of the day, it's another family going down the tubes because of weakness and drugs. And, you know, there's a British saying that may or may not apply in this case. There's an old British saying that went like this: from sandals to sandals in three generations. What they meant by that was the grandfather usually comes up from nothing, makes it big. The son then makes it, you know, takes the fortune and enhances it. And by the next generation, they're back to being paupers again. From sandals to sandals in three generations. So far as I remember, Ronald Reagan came from extremely humble background, an extremely humble background. You could argue that his sons, of course, brought the family down to the sandal level, but you don't know where this ends. It's a very sad story at the end of the day. Let's talk about some other nice things on the Savage Nation. What else do we have in the kitty here, in the sound kitty? You got to play clip 16 again. I can't get enough of this. Play it again.
It can be a party for a 24-year-old pro-sex woman. It can be. I just think that we have people that are in this party that are hijacking and trying to make it even more extreme.
Can anyone explain to me what a pro-sex woman is as opposed to an anti-sex woman? Do you know anyone who's 24 is anti-sex? I mean, I think she made a mistake. They even laughed at her on that show when she said, 24-year-old pro-sex. It's sad. You know, honey, it's not too late for your parents to send you to a nunnery. If Megan McShane could just go to a nunnery for a few years, she may come out as a sane person. You understand this? What do you mean a pro-sex woman? What is an anti-sex woman? Now, George Soros, as you well know, many call him Dr. Evil. He should have his own comic strip. He was on a TV show the other day on CNN, and Soros says that free market capitalism is bankrupt. Let's listen to 17 and 18 back to back.
It was the advanced capitalist countries that turned out to be running very weak policies.
Yes. It is effectively a bankruptcy of this market fundamentalist belief, which really came in with Reagan and Thatcher. Reagan is still in the panoply of saints in this country, and we just have to recognize that something went very wrong, and we need to reformulate our view of how financial markets work.
Now, we're listening to the Boy Scout George Soros, who almost bankrupted the British pound, who almost bankrupted the Malaysian currency, who is behind putting Obama in power. He is possibly one of the most manipulative people in the history of the world, saying that Reaganism and Thatcherism were evil and bad, and that we need to rearrange capitalism so he can make even more money. This man is over 77 years old. Do you understand the mental illness of people who are so rich that there's no amount of money on earth that could save them? Do you understand what that means to us, what that says about a soul, that no amount of money will ever satisfy them? That's sort of a bankruptcy on one side or a nymphomania of a type on the other. There are people who are nymphomaniacs not for sex but for money. There are other people who are nymphomaniacs, if you want to put it in that crude terminology, but it gets the point across better, who are nymphomaniacs for power. How would you define a man who says that our market system is broken and that we need to reorient it? You understand what he's saying, don't you? That we need naked socialism in order for George Soros to run the world. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Dolls, the instant turn-on. For instant love. Instant excitement. Ultimate hell.
Nellie O'Hara!
Such a nice kid. And then someone put her name in lights and turned her into a fingernail and claw fighter who went down swinging. Now on the screen with every shock and sensation intact. Valley of the Dolls.
It can be a party for a 24-year-old pro-sex woman.
I'm sorry, that worked. So, thank you, guys. They did that on the spur of the moment. You remember the movie The Valley of the Dolls? That was amazing. Obama to trigger a nuke option on healthcare, Drudge just posted. I mean, we were playing that earlier today. President Obama to say Democrats will use reconciliation to pass Senate healthcare reform fix if not given up or down vote. This is the same group of gangsters, I mean of demon cats, who only a few years ago were crying in their beer over the Republicans threatening to use this nuclear option. Let's play that montage again from 29 through 34 so you'll know who the Democrats really are, you lousy bums who voted for them.
What I worry about would be that you essentially have still two chambers, the House and the Senate, but you have simply majoritarian absolute power on either side. And that's just not what the founders intended.
We are on the precipice of a crisis, a constitutional crisis. The checks and balances which have been at the core of this republic are about to be evaporated by the nuclear option. The checks and balances which say that if you get 51% of the vote, you don't get your way 100% of the time. It is amazing. It's almost a temper tantrum.
The nuclear option, if successful, will turn the Senate into a body that could have its rules broken at any time by a majority of senators unhappy with any position taken by the minority.
This nuclear option is ultimately an example of the arrogance of power. It is a fundamental power grab.
We are not going to follow the Senate rules. No. Because of the arrogance of power of this Republican administration.
I say to my friends on the Republican side, you may own the field right now, but you won't own it forever. And I pray God, when the Democrats take back control, we don't make the kind of naked power grab you are doing.
Now, I personally would rather be at the mercy of the insurance companies than be at the mercy of the socialist tyrant Barack Obama. If the Democrats force this bill through using the nuclear option, going against the consent of the governed, I believe that Obama should be impeached. And I believe that the Tea Parties should become an impeachment movement. That's the only power they're going to have, and you heard it first in the Savage Nation. Many of you are frustrated in the Tea Parties knowing the Republicans are trying to either co-opt you or to neutralize you. And you say, well, therefore, we have no power. Oh, you have a lot of power. And I'm going to put it out again, because I am the architect of the entire conservative movement in the United States of America today, whether you accept it or not. I am telling you in the Tea Parties, if they go against the will of the governed, you turn the Tea Party power into an impeachment organization. And then you're going to see what power is.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Dolls, the instant turn-on. For instant love. Instant excitement. Ultimate hell.
Nellie O'Hara!
Such a nice kid. And then someone put her name in lights and turned her into a fingernail and claw fighter who went down swinging. Now on the screen with every shock and sensation intact. Valley of the Dolls.
It can be a party for a 24-year-old pro-sex woman. It can be. I just think that we have people that are in this party that are hijacking and trying to make it even more extreme.
There's a new study out that says the marijuana use is tied to psychosis. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. I'm not implying anything by reading this right on the heels of Valley of the Dolls and the doll baby of McCain, but this just came out, and I've been covering this for 10, 15, 20 years. The longer people use marijuana, the more likely they are to experience hallucinations or delusions or to suffer psychosis, according to a study released Saturday. Now, as you well know, most Democrats, particularly the so-called progressive types, are either former or current RDDBs, red diaper doper babies. And the study found that people who first used cannabis when they were aged 15 or younger were twice as likely to develop a non-effective psychosis, which can include schizophrenia, than those who had never used the drug. It's good research. It was led by John McGrath from the University of Queensland in Australia, and it was based on a survey of 3,801 people with an average age of 20.1 years. Among all the participants, a longer duration since the first time they used cannabis was associated with multiple psychosis-related outcomes, the study said. I can read you the details. Many of them were diagnosed with non-affective psychosis, such as schizophrenia, and 233 of them had at least one hallucination, including one thought he was president. Individuals who had experienced hallucinations early in life were more likely to have used cannabis longer and to use it more frequently, it said. But the relationship between psychosis and cannabis and being a Democrat is far too complex to discuss here on The Savage Nation. I will say this. The study goes on to say people who were vulnerable to psychosis, in other words, had isolated psychotic symptoms, were more likely to commence cannabis use, which could then subsequently contribute to an increased risk of conversion to a non-effective psychotic disorder, the research said. The article said previous studies had also identified an association between cannabis use and psychosis, blah, blah, blah. Now, what does this have to do with Obama? Nothing directly. But it has to do with the people who don't understand what he's doing to this country and its freedoms. And I direct this to the RDDBs in America, the red diaper dopa babies, who frankly are the so-called socialist, communist, anarchist progressives who elected the imposter, who is now about to use a fascistic technique called reconciliation to pass a bill that the governed do not want. And I'm going to play some sound bites through this hour from 2005, from Hillary Clinton, Senator Obama, Senator Schumer, Senator Feinstein, Senator Biden, Senator Reid, who was saying that reconciliation was bad, wrong, unconstitutional, not what the founding fathers wanted. And many of you are listening to the show are in tea parties across America, and you're worried that your movement has lost its power. Before it even began, it was co-opted by the checked pants Republicans. Many in the Tea Parties are saying, if we can't elect candidates because the party system is too strong, where do we go? We're certainly not going to vote for a Democrat, but I'll be damned if I'm going to vote for a Republican hack who's just another Bush 3 now. We're not going to do it. We're not doing Bush 3 under another name. We're not voting for that party of check pants Republican, get along, go along. We're not doing it. So what do we do with our Tea Parties? What do we do with our movement? What do we do with our inherent power? Here is a suggestion from Michael Savage, the architect of the conservative movement in America today. I'm not the architect of the original conservative movement by any means. We'd have to go way back for that one. But I would say, since I designed the concept of borders, language, and culture as defining a nation, you could pretty much know that I am pretty much the man who put a lot of conservatives in business. So let's put that aside. I don't need a halo for that. I need it for another reason to mention that at all. So what are you going to do with your power if you're in a Tea Party? What you're going to do is you're going to consider the following. If the governed, the consent of the governed is what a democracy is about, a republic like ours was built upon the government ruling with the consent of the governed. Obama and his minions are not ruling with the consent of the governed. They're ruling against the consent of the governed. Therefore, they're in breach of the Constitution. And therefore, you can initiate an impeachment movement against Obama. Now, you say, well, we can't do it. We need Congress. Yes, my friends, you can do it. You can do it. If he pushes reconciliation, what you're going to do is you're going to go to the Republican Party and the fine people who are thinking they're going to be president, such as Palin and Romney, and you're going to tell them in no uncertain terms that unless you help us with impeachment against Obama, we're not going to support you. You're going to turn the heat up. You're going to put the sterno under Sarah Palin's behind. You're going to put the sterno under Romney's Mantan can, and you're going to tell them that they're going to impeach Obama for not ruling with the consent of the governed. How's that for an idea? Give me a call on that. Chicago, John, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
God bless you, Dr. Savage. With you being an excellent student of history, I'd like to present the worst-case scenario and then suggest how the Tea Party could help very much along the lines you're talking. Worst-case scenario would be a so-called terrorist flying under the radar with a suitcase nuke could take out Congress and Supreme Court any day of the week. With 350 czars in place, Obama could declare martial law and the game is over. But here's the solution. Sort of like what you're saying, if Tea Partiers right here, right now, demand of Obama and all of the Republicans and all of the Democrats that Obama produce his birth certificate right here, right now, number one, he won't be able to do it. Number two...
Hold on. I want to stop you right now for one reason. Although there are questions about Obama's birth, they're legitimate ones, by the way. We do not know if he was born in Hawaii, Kenya, or Indonesia. I think that's the wrong approach. because even if you prove it, it leads to nothing. Whereas if you initiate an impeachment movement against him, the minute he pushes reconciliation through, you say that he's using a tactic that's unconstitutional, he's committed high crimes and misdemeanors, he's impeached. What you do is you go after the Republicans and you threaten to throw them out unless they vote for impeachment. And then you're going to have teeth in the Tea Party movement. That's my opinion. And I thank you for calling, Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255. New York, Frank, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Frank. I believe that the largest problem with this country is its people itself. And what happened right after Ronald Reagan, globalism hit us very hard. And with a stroke of a pen by Bill Clinton, it basically destroyed our manufacturing and our high-skilled industry.
That's correct. Bill Clinton destroyed us with NAFTA and then with CAFTA. Bill Clinton destroyed us with NAFTA and the WTO. If you remember, the little nice fellas from China were buying whole manufacturing plants out of America with every piece of machinery, and Bill Clinton said, fine, go ahead and do it. Bill Clinton transferred our technology to China and to many other emerging countries. He deindustrialized America. Bill Clinton began the deindustrialization of the United States of America. Do you agree with that?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I owned a company and that was growing leaps and bounds, and it's in a very high-skilled industry. I actually built parts for some of our tactical fighters, and the problem is you can't compete against people that make less than a dollar an hour, and for some reason this country thinks that we should be competing with them. And
you don't understand. We don't think we should be competing with them. Gangster criminals in the White House who are in the hands of, let us say, hidden forces wanted to destroy America's sovereignty. And they did so first by taking out our manufacturing base and deindustrializing this country. At the same time, they flooded us with illegal aliens to make certain that English no longer became the cohesive force of the nation. At the same time, they conducted a culture war against America in order to break down the remnants of the family. At the same time, they brought bogus lawsuits against the Catholic Church in order to destroy the church. Do you understand that this has been a war going on for at least 30 years in this country, 25 to 30 years?
Oh, definitely, without a doubt. I'm just a little...
Okay, and Obama is not the beginning of this war, but he could be the end of the war. He could be the final, let's just say he could be the final one. Let's put it to you that way. Thanks for the call. I'll be right back.
Savage.
All right. So Obama's just come out and said that he's going to use reconciliation to push health care against the will of the people. He doesn't care. Clinton, Obama, Schumer, Feinstein, Biden, Reid are on record from 05 saying that that is unconstitutional and it is not what the founding fathers had in mind. They're going to use the nuclear option even though they said those things then. So therefore, we know that they're hypocrites and liars. So what do you do about it? You impeach him. You impeach him. You use his own words, as they say, to hang him by their own petard. In other words, if Senator Obama says that you end up with a majoritarian absolute power structure when you use reconciliation as a tactic, and this is not what the founding fathers intended, and he himself is a constitutional lawyer, then what you do is you take his own words and you impeach him for violating the Constitution. High crimes and misdemeanors, anyone? And that's where the Tea Parties can have tremendous power. Even if you don't succeed, the power you will bring upon the process will have ramifications well beyond what you may imagine. That's my opinion. San Francisco, 860 on the dial. Randy, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. If the Founding Fathers didn't intend for a simple majority to pass legislation in either House of Congress, then why didn't they codify it in the Constitution?
If they did not intend?
Right. If they wanted a supermajority or something more than a simple majority to pass...
Well, wait a minute. Listen to clip 29. Here's what your president had to say about it in 05. Listen.
What I worry about would be that you essentially have still two chambers, the House and the Senate, but you have simply majoritarian absolute power on either side. And that's just not what the founders intended.
So that was your president in 2005, but in 2010, he likes a majoritarian absolute power structure.
I see the hypocrisy, but my point remains, why didn't they codify a supermajority or something other than a simple majority for the passing of legislation in either house?
Well, I will then answer it with clip 30. Listen to Senator Schumer. He's a genius. Listen to him.
We are on the precipice of a crisis, a constitutional crisis. The checks and balances which have been at the core of this republic are about to be evaporated by the nuclear option. The checks and balances which say that if you get 51% of the vote, you don't get your way 100% of the time. It is amazing. It's almost a temper tantrum.
So what do you have to say to Obama and Schumer who don't agree with you?
Well, let's read the Constitution. They would have codified...
But why is it that this procedure was considered such by Obama, Feinstein, Schumer, Biden, and Reid when they were not the majority, but now they think it's fine, as do you, Randy? Why is that?
Because they're hypocrites, but who cares? You know what?
All right, well, thanks for the call. They're hypocrites, but who cares? That's all. Boca Raton, Jill, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, excuse me, Mr. Dr. Savage. I have to let you know that I'm kind of offended because I'm a habitual marijuana smoker, and at the top of the hour, you were really bashing the marijuana movement, and you were saying that we suffer from hallucinogenic side effects or something crazy like that, and I'm perfectly fine and normal. So I don't know why you tried to bring that up on the air and make us look like...
Well, because marijuana or Mary Jane or weed or hash or herb or cannabis is an extremely dangerous drug. Whether you use it or not is irrelevant to the medical or scientific discussion. You do know that you are poisoning your body and that marijuana contains more than 400 harmful chemicals, including powerful cancer-causing chemicals. You do know that, don't you?
Exactly. Same with the food that we eat from the grocery store. There's a lot of things in the things that we eat.
You're not going to say that a carrot has the same effects that marijuana does, are you?
Nowadays it does. Look at all the farmers.
So you're going to say that marijuana will elevate the heart rate and pulse rate? You'll say that carrots produce panic attacks, anxiety, hallucinations, and paranoia the way marijuana does?
I've never suffered that. All of my friends have never suffered that. So I'm trying to figure out where you got your source from and why you...
It's not where I got my source from. The scientific literature is replete with information on this subject. Marijuana is a toxic substance. As I said before, it contains more than 400 harmful chemicals. Shall I read you the list of chemicals which are derived from marijuana smoke?
No, but all I know is when we smoke all together, we don't care about the chemicals. We're happy, and that's all we want. That's right.
And the person who sticks a needle with heroin in their arm doesn't care about the effects on themselves or on society. They feel good. So you're saying if it feels good, do it.
Two totally different things. I do think what you should do is make yourself happy no matter what you have to do. I don't think...
Make yourself happy no matter what you have to do. What about the effect that marijuana has on memory and memory loss?
I remember pretty much anything that people who don't smoke marijuana doesn't. So I remember a lot of things and my memory is not...
Well, you may be one of those who can tolerate marijuana and not have the negative side effects, Jill. There are people who are outside the norm. But the norm is not you. Many, many people are not aware of the dangers of marijuana. It is not the benign drug that the libs want you to believe it is.
I agree with you on one thing. That is, you're right. Maybe it's not the right drug for everybody. But all I'm trying to say is I'm trying to defend...
Will you agree that marijuana alters one's perceptions of time and distance?
I would say not if you're a habitual user. Maybe it's like your first...
Would you say marijuana affects reflexes and coordination? Would you want to be driving on marijuana? Do you think others should be able to drive on marijuana?
I drive better while I'm on marijuana.
That means you're a danger to society and you should be arrested the next time you drive on marijuana. How do you differ from a drunk?
Driving that train, I'm cocaine. But I would not feel so all alone. Stone you when you're trying to keep your seat.
So after 40, 50 years of the culture war, Bill Clinton deindustrializing America, George Bush and his mistakes, we now have an America that's almost on its knees. Now, yesterday, Michelle Obama gives a speech to cafeteria workers saying that the job they're doing in school cafeterias is equal. She said, well, they're basically doing work related to national security. That was Michelle Obama yesterday. I went off on a tangent with that, saying there's something wrong with this picture. When you have Barry and Michelle, who were so out of touch with reality that she could make a statement like that, that cafeteria workers are equal to the Marines, basically. I said, this is like having a very bad group of liberal college teachers that you're required to take their courses and put up with them, but you know the class will be over and you'll move on and get your degree and be able to go back to the sane world. The problem is the damage that Barry and Michelle are doing to this country may be permanent. And then I went into the school cafeteria thing on clip 13. I had no idea there were so many heroes in the cafeterias. All that tomato soup and when I was a kid in the Bronx, I hated tomato, smell of tomato soup. When I went in the cafeteria, I would retch from it. That smell of institutional soup. See, my day, they actually cooked the food. It wasn't brought in like a tray from McDonald's or wherever they bring it in from. Marriott Food Catering. In my day, they had like weird-looking women. Like, they were like out of like mental institutions working. Remember, they looked like those dietitians. They didn't call dietitians. They worked in like the school kitchens. They were scary women. They were very pasty. They all looked like that. They were like devil worshippers to me. I never wanted to touch any of their food, whatever they made, but that smell of the tomato soup, as I entered the PS49 in the Bronx, I think, whatever I went to, I'd go to the cafeteria like instant smacko migraine the minute I walked into the, ugh, that smell of the tomato soup. I mean, if you're repainting your car, okay, you take a quart home, spill it on the hood, wipe it in, and like, you know, it's Miracle Wipe, takes the paint right off. I don't know what they put in there. It must have been like excess government tomatoes from Italy or something after the war that they bought tomatoes from the Italian. Who knows? They bought them underground tomatoes. They don't have them anymore, right? Now they're like basically from San Quentin. This new crop isn't even like wacky. I mean, they give ex-cons jobs. I don't believe they got to have a job. Look, nothing wrong with that. But they're all voters. Motor voters, you know. They're motor voters. So here we are. That smell of the chicken, I can still smell it. There was another smell that got me sick as a child. I'm thinking of like I'm doing my Proustian olfactory now. There's another smell from childhood that comes back. It's like Campbell's chicken noodle soup. It's like a mixed feeling. One homey, friendly. The other side like MSG-ish, no good. Not equal to my mother's soup, which always gave me a migraine. And any soup that didn't give me a migraine, I didn't trust. Courtesy of Buddy Hackett. Now, he put it another way. I was raised on such bad food that I had no idea that food was... I didn't know what good food was. If food did not leave me slight dyspeptic with a migraine, I thought it was a bad meal. It was so awful. I mean, it was high cholesterol, high salt. Impossible to believe they could feed a child food like that and not go to prison, you know, for child endangerment. I mean, you talk about school... It's no wonder I got a PhD in nutrition. I was like running for my life to try to figure out what had been done to me the previous 25 years. If you took a lab animal, let's say the arterial system in an animal that's closest to man is a pig or a rabbit, as I understand it, because I know that Dr. McCulley at Harvard used rabbits in the 1950s to induce atherosclerosis. He denied them vitamin B6. He diminished their diets in B6 and almost immediately gave them a hardening of the arteries. You don't know about that. Your doctor doesn't want you to know it. He only wants to put you on Lipitor so you become a cripple and need arthritis drugs after you have to take the Lipitor-related compounds. You start walking around like your uncle, you know, with a killer. So Dr. McCulley used the rabbit. But if you took a rabbit or a pig and you put them, God rest the soul, on the diet I ate as a child, the animal's dead in 6 months. So it's actually a miracle. I mean, I must have some superpowers that I could overcome what I was force-fed. From childhood, foods that my body rejected. Even milk I hated. I hated milk. You have to have your milk. They put a clown thing on top of the glass of milk.
It can be a party for a 24-year-old pro-sex woman. It can be. I just think that we have people that are in this party that are hijacking and trying to make it even more extreme.
You know, I'm mixing things up for the potheads who are listening. The minute I attack marijuana, I get a whole different demographic of pot smokers who don't know what the hell they're listening to. They're having a good time now. They don't realize that they're just basically cannon fodder for Obama. They're cannon fodder. They don't know that. Behavior of marijuana users change their friends, decline in school academics and performance at the workplace, secretive, suffer from a loss of motivation and interest in life, less socially interactive, constant deja vu. How many of you potheads have deja vus? Oh, wow. Yeah. Self-absorbed, sloppy, loud talk and laughter. They wear shades or sunglasses to hide bloodshot eyes. Here are some withdrawal symptoms of marijuana use. Anxiety, craving, depression, headaches, irritability, nausea, restlessness, sleep disturbances, sweating, and stomach upset. Now, I want to just conclude with one thing that many potheads don't know, and you got to tell your children this, because many of them have been brainwashed to believe that marijuana is natural, unlike tobacco, which is unnatural. Of course, marijuana is natural in the sense that it's a plant, but so is tobacco a plant. But what you don't know is that both marijuana and tobacco contain toxic chemicals such as tar, carbon monoxide, and cyanide. Very same things in smoking it. But marijuana smoke actually has more cancer-causing chemicals than tobacco. Over 400 harmful chemicals, which include cancer-causing carcinogens, are found in marijuana. But here's the thing. The amount of marijuana smoked per puff is two-thirds larger than a typical puff of a tobacco cigarette, because marijuana is smoked differently than tobacco, as you know. Dope is smoked in much deeper into the lungs. It's held there for up to four times as long as tobacco, right? Now, ask yourself why a society would outlaw cigarettes virtually at every turn and say almost nothing about marijuana other than to decriminalize it. And then ask yourself, who is behind the decriminalization of marijuana? George Soros. George Soros has funded initiatives in several states to decriminalize or legalize marijuana. Now, that could be you could argue with either way. I don't like that many people in jail because of use of marijuana. I don't think anyone should be jailed for using marijuana, by the way. I think there are far too many people in prison to begin with, and I think there are far too many people in prison for using any drug, by the way. That's my opinion. I do not believe that the jail should be filled with people who are using drugs at all. At all. You want to go after it from different fronts, but don't go after it for the user. Go after it from the supplier or the dope peddler. But that's a discussion for another time. But many young people don't realize that marijuana is filled with so many toxins. They think, oh, it's fine, it's natural, it's normal. It isn't. It's highly carcinogenic. Let's put aside that it affects you mentally and it screws you up and makes you weaker. Why would you want to weaken yourself in a competitive world? Don't you understand other people are going to run you over? I don't mean on the highway. I don't mean literally. They're going to run by you. They're going to run you over if you're impaired. And, of course, that's why guys like Soros wanted to legalize marijuana. They wanted more youngsters doped up, in my opinion, in order to, again, weaken America. All part of the same exact program that you're seeing enacted now by the illegitimate Democrat Party, which is going against the consent of the governed. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. You want to talk about pot, you want to talk about impeachment, you want to talk about immigration, you want to talk about Meghan McShane being a pro-sex woman. What do you want to talk about? All of these topics are worth discussing. I haven't taken a call yet from New York. Let's go to New York. WOR, Michael, go ahead, please. What's on your mind?
Hi, Michael. Before I saw it, that was just so entertaining to listen to. And without that, it would just be depressing.
Thank you. Thanks for the double compliment.
Yes, yes. I mean, giving all the issues. You just need the funny stuff just to keep it alive.
You do.
I'm going back to the point you made about impeachment. And while I agree with you that we need true blue conservatives and checkered Republicans don't get us anywhere, I disagree with your call for impeachment based on 3 points, and if you just let me get them out, then you take me on that.
I'm perfect. Look, hold it. Yes, I do want to hear them, because that's how ideas should grow or die, based upon discussion. My argument is that the Tea Party movement is being co-opted or destroyed by the Republican Party. Obama's going against the consent of the governed, and he should be impeached. The Tea Party movement should move for impeachment by pressuring the Republicans. Give us your point of view.
Okay. Number one, it'll never get to the House floor because Nancy Pelosi will never let it get there. That's number one. Number two is that...
Well, let me respond to point number one. It does not have to get to the House floor to have tremendous effects. Do you realize what would happen if millions of people were walking in the streets saying impeach Obama for going against the Constitution? Do you have any idea what effect that would have around the world? Do you have any idea how that would undermine him and the Democrats and their agenda? It doesn't matter whether or not it leads to actual impeachment. What matters is the perception of impeachment would already have been achieved simply by the millions of people holding up signs saying impeach Obama for a dereliction of duty or for going against the constitutional or for high crimes and misdemeanors. The perception, both domestically and worldwide, would be very effectual.
Okay, understood. I think that negates my second point. My second point was even if we got to the floor, we don't have the votes. I guess that answers that point as well. But my third point, which is the one you're going to dislike the most, and that is, given the fact, you're right, I understand that point, that it'll make an effect, but I realize that we can't take over the House this November. We can't get anywhere if we don't have votes from people who don't, we can't turn off the people who don't hold that conviction.
No, I hear what you're saying. You don't have to mince words. What you're saying is we're gonna look too radical and too crazy and alienate the middle, and you're afraid of that. Isn't that more or less what you're saying?
Yes, but in other words, I think we can get the middle to agree with our positions, but if we do...
Wait, hold on. When you say take over the House, you're not alleging that the Republican Party did such a great job under Bush that they are worthy of retaking power, are you?
No, but I think this is better than the current group.
Well, wait a minute. Better by what? By one degree of separation? You know, this is the kind of crap that Sean Hannity is trying to pull off right now. The Republican hack Sean Hannity and the other schmucks who are telling you the Republicans are the greatest thing in the world if only we had them back. They're liars. They're pimps for the Republican Party, and I will have nothing to do with it. The Republicans are not worthy of return to power if they're going to do the same thing they did under Bush. No, I disagree. I say to hell with them both because they're both taking us over the cliff. What did they do to stop the deindustrialization of America when they had power? What did they do to stop the war in Afghanistan and Iraq when it went on and on forever? They did nothing. It was all about contracts. It was about Halliburton getting the contracts because they took over a company and they lost a fortune in taking over that company. And these no-bid contracts made Halliburton a profitable company again. This is one of the most corrupt parties in history, the Republicans. I wouldn't go for them, not at all. I'm sorry.
You know what? There's no way we'll get deficit spending. We'll just be 2 more years of this Democratic Congress along with a Democratic president.
Oh, wait a minute. Are you alleging that you actually believe the Republicans will stop deficit spending when it was George Bush who started the deficit spending?
I think some Republicans can. Ronald Reagan like Republicans, yes.
Well, okay. How many are there?
Not too many.
Micah, look, I don't want to just disagree with you to sound contentious, but I think the Republican Party is useless as it's structured. Now, you know that there is a hardcore of good conservatives in the Republican Party, but they have almost no power right now. I had Representative Culberson on from Texas last week. Great guy. Jeff Sessions, great guy. Jim DeMint, great guy. There's only less than 5 to 10 of them. How in the hell can the Republican Party continue to pretend it's going to be different from the Democrat Party when they had absolute power for 8 years and look what they did to this country in those 8 years?
No, you're right. I think
I don't want to be right. I want the country to be righted. I don't want to be right. I want the country to be righted, and they're not the party to do it. So you say, where does that leave us? Well, it's a good question, my friends of the Savage Nation. I think we have to start with agitprop. I think we have to employ all the techniques of Obama and Saul Alinsky and the Frankfurt School. I think we have to go into the streets. Hey, we're in the streets, aren't we? Not me. I'm on the air every day. I'm in your head. I do my job on the radio. But millions of Americans have joined Tea Parties. They're out in the streets, but they're not focused. They're not focused enough on the cause of the problem. You've got to go to the head of the snake in order to stop the snake's actions. That means impeach Obama. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Train.
better watch your speed.
The fact that Obama has to resort to this quasi-constitutional tactic called reconciliation indicates to me that the presidential mystique is completely out of steam. And the fact of the matter is that the president is a gravely wounded presidency. The fact of the matter is that Obama is, in a way, a failed president already. The fact of the matter is that he's going against his own party's positions of not too many years ago. The fact of the matter is that even Clinton, Schumer, Feinstein, Biden, and Reid have said and put on record that the nuclear option, the so-called 51-vote nuclear option, to push through a bill is not only unconstitutional, but it's against the will of the people. It's a power grab. It is a naked power grab, according to Biden. It is a fundamental power grab, according to Biden. It is a tantrum, according to Senator Schumer. It violates the checks and balances of the Constitution, according to Senator Schumer. Schumer says Obama, when he was a senator, said that what he is about to do is not what the Founding Fathers intended. And so, therefore, I say that he, by his own words, could be impeached. If not within the halls of Congress, which, of course, is unlikely, he could be impeached in the streets of the United States of America. I want you to try to imagine this. What if the thousands, hundreds of thousands, or millions of you who are members of Tea Parties, I don't know how many there really are, went out in the streets with signs that were all cohesive, all focused, and all focused on one thing, and not on 100 different things, where the blizzard of signs neutralize each other because there are too many messages. But all the messages were around one theme. They don't have to be the same wording, but they should be around one theme. Impeach Obama. Impeach Obama for violating checks and balances. Impeach Obama for going against the will of the governed. Impeach Obama for whatever you want to say to do with this issue of reconciliation. Use their own words. Now you say, well, what effect is it going to have? Think about the effects it would have. Think about the effects it would have on the minds of millions of others who don't really know what's going on. You could teach them a powerful lesson in democracy, in checks and balances, in what it is to live in a constitution, and what it is to live in an increasingly despotic nation ruled by a small band of people who want their own way, no matter what the people say. Think of the power you have with those posters in the street. They can't stop you. Think of the power of the protesters in Iran against those throwback women-hating mullahs and how they're trying to beat them, hose them, rape them, and kill them. You say, what effect does it have? I don't know. What effect does it have? It's a shame that Obama won't help the democracy movement in Iran. It's a damn shame that Obama won't help the democracy movement in Iran. The only people that this party hate are the people who believe in the Constitution. The only people this party fears are the people who are real patriots. The only people who this administration targets are the patriots of this country. They don't fear the Islamo-fascists as much as they do the so-called right-wing. Psychopathic liberals, the red diaper dopa babies, actually hate the constitutionalists in this country. We didn't play the soundbite of Mark Potok of the so-called Southern Poverty Law Center, but he says the greatest threat to America are the patriots, the right-wingers. Those of you who listen to the Savage Nation. So we have a constitutional crisis. Is it going to be a republic run by the will of the governed or by the will of a small few anti-constitutional specialists under Obama? All Maoists and Marxists.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Now, on the Savage Nation today, I want to go through some of the sound bites because you may have heard them or you may not have heard some of them. They're amazing. We played flashback sounds of various Democrat senators putting down the use of reconciliation when they were in power. Senator Clinton had come before the Senate and said that this is illegal. It goes too far. And she said to Bush, you have to restrain yourself.
So this president has come to the majority here in the Senate and basically said, change the rules. Do it the way I want it done. And I guess there just weren't very many voices on the other side of the aisle that acted the way previous generations of senators have acted and said, Mr. President, we're with you. We support you. But that's a bridge too far. We can't go there. You have to restrain yourself, Mr. President.
Senator Obama mumbled and said he worries about a majoritarian absolute power trip if you use reconciliation. And he said this is not what the Founding Fathers intended.
What I worry about would be that you essentially have still two chambers, the House and the Senate, but you have simply majoritarian absolute power on either side. And that's just not what the Founders intended.
Thank you, Senator Obama. I guess now that you're president, it is what the Founding Fathers intended. And here's Senator Upchuck Schumer on reconciliation, says we're on the precipice of a constitutional crisis.
We are on the precipice of a crisis, a constitutional crisis. The checks and balances which have been at the core of this republic are about to be evaporated by the nuclear option. The checks and balances which say that if you get 51% of the vote, you don't get your way 100% of the time. It is amazing. It's almost a temper tantrum.
The checks and balances are about to be evaporated by the nuclear option. It's almost a temper tantrum. Now, remember what I'm talking about. These are Democrats who now are going to use reconciliation to ramrod socialized medicine through with a technique called reconciliation. They were all opposed to it when Bush was president. Here's Senator Dianne Feinstein, the shopping cart woman, says that this option, if successful, turns the Senate into a body that can have its rules broken at any time by the majority, unhappy with any position taken by the minority.
The nuclear option, if successful, will turn the Senate into a body that could have its rules broken at any time by a majority of senators unhappy with any position taken by the minority.
Thank you, Dianne. Very sage advice. And here's Senator Biden, who said that the nuclear option is ultimately an example of the arrogance of power. It is a fundamental power grab.
This nuclear option is ultimately an example of the arrogance of power. It is a fundamental power grab.
Thank you, Senator Biden. And here's Senator Harry Reid saying that the nuclear option is an arrogance of power.
We are not going to follow the Senate rules. No. Because of the arrogance of power of this Republican administration.
And here's Senator Biden saying they may own the field right now, but they won't own it forever. And he prays to God when the Dems get it back, they won't try this naked power grab.
I say to my friends on the Republican side, you may own the field right now, but you won't own it forever. And I pray God when the Democrats take back control, we don't make the kind of naked power grab you are doing.
Thank you, Senator Biden, for putting your foot in your mouth. We also played a savage reminiscence about school cafeteria staff and food. You really have to hear that one. And, of course, we now have to focus on George Soros, who declares that free market capitalism is bankrupt. Andy Stern, the head of a union in the White House more than any other visitor under the communist President Obama, says that wealth must be redistributed. Have I told you over and over again that these people are naked Marxists? I now want to focus for a minute or two on Meghan McShane. That's John McShane's daughter. The inner John McCain is Meghan McShane. She comes out attacking conservatives today, attacking the Tea Parties. She attacked the former Congressman Tom Tancredo for stating at a Tea Party convention that many people who voted for President Obama could not pass a basic civics literacy test. Now, that's absolutely true, by the way. Megan McShame said, quote, "That's innate racism. And I think it's why young people are turned off by this movement. Revolutions start with young people," said Megan, "not with 65-year-old people talking about literacy tests and people who can't say the word vote in English. It's ridiculous," said the pro-sex daughter of the shameful McShame. You know, but in a way, Megan McShame symbolizes the future of the Republican Party. If much of her father's generation was weak and unprincipled, her generation revels in their spinelessness, flaunting their lack of principle. She proudly proclaimed to the world that she was a pro-sex woman. She appears on catty chick shows with Barbara Walters and Whoopi Goldberg. This girl is the worst possible example of what the Republicans could become if they follow the path of least resistance, the go-along, get-along route that her father, John McShame, charted very much for himself into oblivion. You see, Republicans must become conservatives once again. They must draw the line on issues of morality. They have to understand we need borders, language, and culture. If they allow themselves to be ruled by the spoiled children of the elite, their decline will continue. They will not represent an opposition to, let us say, liberal socialism. The Republicans will represent the moronic, debauched left in this nation on a different track, for which Megan McShame is the poster child. That's my opinion. And I'm Michael Savage. Whether you disagree with me or agree with me is irrelevant, frankly. Anyway, here we are. We're all wonderful. We're all great. At the end of the day, we're nothing. Ashes to ashes, dust to dust. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Record snowfall has hit the country, and up until recently, Al Gore was nowhere to be found. Here to discuss Gore's answer to Mother Nature is Senator James Inhofe from Oklahoma. Senator Inhofe, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael, thanks for having me on again.
Well, what do you make of Al Gore's comments?
Well, we waited for a long time for Al Gore to come forth, and, you know, here's a guy, and first of all, I'd like to say there are listeners out there who probably feel sorry for Al Gore. Don't. He's the big winner on this thing. The estimates are upwards of $1 billion he's made on this thing, so he can afford to suffer a little bit like he is now. But when he came out with his response in the op-ed piece in the New York Times, the things he said were just a rehash of what he said before. He talks about the dependency on oil, on foreign oil, and my gosh, the reason we are dependent upon foreign oil is not because we don't have oil here. We have oil and gas and coal, the largest proven reserves of anywhere in the world. The problem is a political problem that all the bleeding heart, left-wing, Hollywood, extremist environmentalists won't let us develop our own reserve. We're the only country in the world that doesn't develop its own resources. Now, if we wanted to really get rid of the dependency, that's how you do it. It has nothing to do with Gore when he says, well, we need to get green jobs. That's fine, except how do you run this this machine called America until that happens?
Exactly.
Then he talked about China. This is kind of interesting. You know, the countries that would benefit the most if we passed some kind of a cap and trade here in the United States would be China and India and Mexico, countries where they don't, they don't have any emission requirements. And that was really humorous because the other day, right before the fiasco in Copenhagen, we had Lisa Jackson, who was the Obama's director of the Environmental Protection Agency, make the statement. I asked her the question. I said, look, if we pass cap and trade in this country, is this going to reduce the CO2 emissions? And she said, no, it wouldn't, because the chief violators are China and India and the developing countries. And I would go one step further and say, if we were to pass it in this country, our manufacturing jobs would have to go places where they don't have these restrictions that we have. It's interesting that China is still cranking out one or two coal-fired generating plants every week over there. So they don't have any interest in doing anything except attracting our industry over there. Well, he came out with all these statements, and I can't find anything he said that hadn't already been stated. He said, and this is a quote, Gore said, later this week, Senators John Kerry, Lindsey Graham, and Joe Lieberman are expected to present for consideration a similar cap-and-trade legislation. Well, what he didn't know was the day before that happened, the three of them had made a statement that we will not introduce cap-and-trade. Now, when you read what they are going to introduce, it's cap-and-trade. They've just renamed it. And I think when Al Gore talked about how this is just a minor thing, this climate gate, that it's really just a slip of the tongue and just conversations, private conversations, nothing serious. Well, let me tell you, it's serious. When you have the Daily Telegraph over in UK, which is one of the largest publications over there, said this. They said this is the most serious scientific scandal in our generation. I mean, that's in the Guardian of all people. The Guardian, a very liberal organization, it said pretending this isn't a real crisis isn't going to make it go away. The Financial Times, the Atlantic magazine here in this country said the stink of intellectual corruption is overpowering.
Hmm.
So all these things, even Time magazine. You might remember, Michael, back when, back in 1975, Time magazine had a front page article, actually is on the cover, Another Ice Age is Coming, We're All Going to Die. That was back in 1975. Then a couple of years ago, they decided, no, it's a global warming. We're all going to die from this. And they had, remember that last pitiful polar bear on the last cube of ice saying, be worried, be very, very worried? Well, now Time magazine is reporting that Glaciergate is a black eye for the IPCC and the climate science community as a whole. Very suddenly, the global body that had seemingly closed the case on climate change was springing more leaks than, well, a melting glacier. Well, that's Time magazine. So, you know, all of them, the Chicago Tribune, the Newsweek, New York Times, and all the rest of them are recognizing this is a huge scandal. And I guess the thing that is redeeming to me, Michael, is you might remember it was 7 years ago in 2003 that after talking to scientists who had been rejected by the United Nations IPCC, had come to me, and I gave a speech on the Senate floor and concluded that the notion that man-made gases are causing catastrophic global warming is the greatest hoax ever perpetrated on the American people. And I believe that that's the case. So the whole climate gate thing has been, I have to say, Michael, it's been redeeming to me because I spent 7 miserable years being beat up because of the statement I made about what a hoax it was. Now people realize that the science has been cooked.
What about those who refuse to listen to you, a U.S. senator?
Michael, I know there are people out there listening to us right now that don't believe me. And if they would access my website, it's Inhofe. Now, Inhofe is spelled I-N-H-O-F-E, inhofe.senate.gov. And access a speech that I made 5 years ago where I told the stories of the different scientists who have come in and said how they're cooking the science. Now, ClimateGate came out and they said the same thing that I said on the Senate floor 5 years ago. So I think that Al Gore has a serious problem now. And I think these, all of them that were so actively involved in this, if you remember the 2003 McCain-Lieberman bill, that was a cap-and-trade bill, then the 2005 McCain-Lieberman bill, and the 2008 Warner-Lieberman bill. These were all essentially the same as Kyoto. And if people want to know what the cost would be, whether you're talking about Kyoto or the McCain-Lieberman bills, or even the bills that will be coming from Kerry and Graham and Lieberman, if they're going to reduce the CO2 and put a premium on it and charge it maybe a tax, it's going to be the same thing as cap and trade. And the cost of cap and trade, interestingly enough, always ranges between $300 and $400 billion every year. Now, that would be the largest tax increase in the history of America.
Why do you say that?
The reason I say that, this isn't just, you know, Senator Jim Inhofe saying it. I'm quoting the Wharton School of Economics, the MIT, the CRA, and the rest of them. They all come to the same conclusion. This would be a huge tax increase. Now, there is one real serious problem coming from this, Michael, and that is President Obama, these are not his words, these are my words, but he has made the very obvious that he knows that we're not going to pass any kind of cap and trade, because I can't find too many Democrats who want to go back to their districts in this Republican election that's coming up in November and brag about passing the largest tax increase in history. So he knows we're not going to pass cap and trade. We're not going to pass anything that Graham and Kerry come up with either. But in the event that what he has said is, since we're not going to pass it in the legislature, we're going to do it through regulations. To do that, and this is kind of in the weeds Washington talk, but they have to find, they being the Environmental Protection Agency, an endangerment finding. Well, right before Copenhagen, we had Lisa Jackson in, the head of the EPA, and I asked her the question. I said, you know, I think you're going to have an endangerment finding, and that has to be based on science. What science are you going to base it on? And she said the IPCC. That's the United Nations. That's the one that is being investigated right now. So they now have an endangerment finding where they're going to try to do what they would have done with a cap and trade, but do it administratively and base it on the science that has been defunct. I don't think they're going to get by with it, and I think that we're going to ultimately win this this war.
Senator Inhofe, thank you for the update and your valuable time.
Well, Michael, thanks again for letting me come on your program. I don't know what we'd do without you.
I'll be right back.
Seven.
Weeks ago on this show, The Savage Nation, we had Eric Stackelback with an exclusive story about a possible poisoning plot involving five Muslim soldiers, you know, who allegedly were poisoning the food at a military base or conspiring to do so. Four of them have been discharged from the Army, but not for doing that. He joins us again for an update.
Well, Michael, it's great to be back. And as you mentioned, I first reported this on The Savage Nation almost 2 weeks ago, this investigation at Fort Jackson. Now, back then, what I reported was that five Muslim soldiers at Fort Jackson in South Carolina were under investigation for allegedly talking about poisoning the food supply at the base. Now, over the past 2 weeks, we've learned a lot of interesting new details here, Michael. This case has taken a lot of twists and turns. Here's where we are right now. Representative Joe Wilson of ULI fame, he's a South Carolina congressman. He told McClatchy newspapers over the weekend that four of these five Muslims have been discharged from the military. A fifth man has been removed from active duty. Now, according to Wilson, and Fort Jackson is Joe Wilson's district, according to Wilson, these men's laptops were seized by military authorities, and congressional sources also say that their cell phones were seized, as well as Arabic writings. Now, Wilson went on to stress, and his office confirmed this for me. I spoke to one of his spokespeople yesterday on the Hill. They confirmed that the investigation is still ongoing, but according to Wilson, who sits on the House Intel Committee, Michael, so he's briefed on these kinds of things, according to Wilson, it had nothing to do with the poisoning allegations. According to him, these men were charged with petty theft. Obviously, there's a lot of smoke and mirrors here.
Sounds a little more than fishy to me. Well, what do you make of it?
I don't know quite what to make of it. I talked to some intel sources over the last 2 days, Michael, who also don't know quite to make of this. What is clear is that four of these men have been discharged, a fifth has been removed from active duty and is still under investigation, but we don't have any clear answers here. Okay, petty theft. What does that entail? What were they trying to steal? Why were their laptops seized and their cell phones and some Arabic writings? Very, very, just a lot of unanswered questions here. I think the military from the very beginning, Michael, has not been forthcoming about this investigation. It began in mid-December, before Christmas. This investigation got underway. It's been going on now for some 2.5 months. The military didn't say anything about it until I first reported it on February 18th, and then, Michael, the response, I think, was very telling. When I did report this, the military, almost angry responses, contradictory, saying, you know, we have no evidence to support the allegations, but the investigation is still ongoing. Okay, if there's no evidence, why is the investigation still ongoing after 2 months?
Exactly.
So many questions here. The media response, Michael, also was very telling by the liberal mainstream media, left-wing bloggers. As soon as I reported this story, which obviously is hugely important in the wake of Fort Hood, obviously, and in the wake of an Al-Qaeda manual released a few years ago, Michael, that British Intel got their hands on, saying that Al-Qaeda wants to poison the food supply. So in the wake of all that, this is a big story, right? Not according to the left. According to them, the MSM, when my story came out, well, there's no evidence to support these allegations. The military says it's not so. This really fascinated me because the left, these are the people who usually down the army, down the military, every chance they get. The left is all about questioning authority. But as soon as the army comes out that night and releases just a pretty contradictory, vague statement, the MSM says, see, move away. Nothing to see here. Nothing happened. Stackelbeck's report is wrong. Well, I have to say, it looks like they were wrong. I had very good sources from the get-go who gave me this information, Michael, and a Fort Jackson spokesperson confirmed the investigation for me. But the MSM, number one, they don't want the Obama administration to look bad. And number two, quite frankly, they don't want Muslims to get bad PR, bad publicity. And the fact that five Muslim soldiers are under investigation at a U.S. military base in the wake of Fort Hood obviously does not shine a positive light on Muslims. And I think this all leads back to the whole smoke and mirrors act here, and the not forthcoming nature of this investigation, if that makes sense. I think it all kind of rests with the military hierarchy. They're crippled by political correctness. Fort Hood should have never happened, Michael. As you know, Nidal Hassan did everything but wear a T-shirt around base saying, I am an Islamic terrorist. It should have never happened. In this case, who knows? It seems like the military, on the positive side, acted quickly, but I worry about General Casey, his comments in the wake of Fort Hood, actual quote from him saying, while this massacre was a real tragedy, what would be even more tragic would be if it hurt our diversity in the military.
Unbelievable.
I don't know, Michael. To me, that's a very, very troubling mindset for one of our top military leaders to have. And it's a mindset that trickles down from the top, from the Obama administration, who still can't bring themselves, in most instances, to identify Islamic terrorism for what it is. Janet Napolitano, the Homeland Security chief, just last week, finally, about 3 months after the Fort Hood attack, finally labeled it Islamic terrorism. Bravo, Madam Secretary. It only took you 3 months. This is misleading the American people. Let's be honest. Let's be upfront about the threat we're facing. And the threat we are facing is an Islamic jihadist threat. It's not a spiritual struggle. Historically, most Muslims have taken jihad to mean military conquest. I wish it wasn't so, but it is, and we have to be honest about it if we're going to win what everyone tells us, all of our leaders tell us, that this is going to be a long struggle. If that is the case, let's be honest with ourselves.
You have more about your recent trip to London?
You know, Michael, this London trip is the jihadi gift that keeps on giving, I guess you could say. As I discussed here last week on the show, interviewed several radical Islamic leaders in London. These men are wanted Islamic terrorists. I also interviewed a guy, Michael, who's an ex-terrorist. He doesn't subscribe to the jihadist ideology anymore. Fascinating guy, a former associate of both Osama bin Laden and Ayman al-Zawahiri, bin Laden's number two. This guy's name is Noman bin Adman. Now, he is a Libyan native, many moons ago to him. He was dedicated to the overthrow of the Libyan regime, the overthrow of Muammar Gaddafi. Now, when you hear that, hey, overthrow Gaddafi, sounds great, right? Unfortunately, bin Adman wanted to replace the Gaddafi regime with an Islamic State. Think of Iran, the Taliban, Sudan, Saudi Arabia. So you have a fascist dictator or an Islamic State, which is another form of fascism. I don't know which is worse, Michael, but this was bin Adman's goal. He traveled to Afghanistan, fought the Soviets there. Now, about 10 years ago, just before 9/11, he was summoned by bin Laden himself to Kandahar, Afghanistan. Now, it was Bin Laden and about 200 other jihadist leaders from around the world. Bin Laden and Zawahiri summoned them to Kandahar for a big meeting, a strategy meeting. And what Bin Laden told me about this, Michael, was fascinating, gave you a real window into al-Qaeda's mindset at the time and even today. Basically, Bin Laden and Zawahiri, no surprise here, were committed to global jihad, to destroying the West. Bin Laden was a guy who was only concerned with Libya. But what he heard from al-Qaeda was a commitment, an obsession, he called it, to not only bring down the West, but to kill civilians. Bin Laden told me that to Bin Laden and Zawahiri, civilians do not exist. And the more civilians they can kill, the better. Nothing excites Bin Laden, according to this former associate of his, than killing women, children in the West.
Oh, my God.
He went on to tell me that Bin Laden spent 30 minutes, Michael, recounting the 98 Africa embassy bombings and how happy there was a twinkle in Bin Laden's eye when he talked about this and he talked about the media reaction to it. So Bin Laden had this one-on-one interaction with Bin Laden, Zawahiri, on several instances. He warned them, according to Noman Bin Laden, he warned these two, hey, if you carry out your plans to strike the United States, the response will be overwhelming. And Zawahiri laughed. He literally laughed and said, no, no, no. And I think this is very telling, Michael. It's an important point. Zawahiri laughed and said, oh, no way. In 1998, we bombed the embassies in Africa. Bill Clinton just fired a few cruise missiles into Afghanistan. This time, what? They'll fire a few more. We have nothing to worry about. We believe that the U.S. is a paper tiger. Bin Laden confirmed what we suspected, Michael. Al-Qaeda, in the run-up to 9/11, believed we were a paper tiger ripe for the pickings. You think back to the track record, 1983, Beirut bombing, no reaction. Somalia, Black Hawk Down, 1993, no reaction. 96, Khobar Towers, no reaction. 98, embassy bombings. 2000, USS Cole. We could go on and on. The U.S. had weak reactions and basically pulled out in most of these situations. So al-Qaeda was brimming with confidence in the run-up to 9/11, Michael. They knew they could pull it off. Bin Laden actually told our friend Noman Bin Laden, hey, because Bin Laden was expressing serious reservations. Bin Laden said, hey, I have one more major operation to undertake. One more, and then I can retire. Retire from jihad, if you can believe that, Michael. Well, obviously, that operation was 9/11. It did not occur.
Why do you say that?
Things didn't go according to plan for al-Qaeda. Number one, Bin Laden not only didn't retire from jihad, but he's on the run. He's been on the run for 8.5, 9 years, and he's still very, very committed to his goals. Number two, America's response, at least at the outset, was punishing, was effective, killed many members of al-Qaeda's senior hierarchy. The third thing is, Noman Bin Laden actually did leave jihad. He's an interesting character, I have to say, Michael. He lives in London now. He got asylum there, like so many others who left the Middle East. Interesting guy. Speaks out against jihad now, offensive jihad, what he calls, and al-Qaeda's ideology. He's on the outs with al-Qaeda, wrote an open letter to Zawahiri in 2007 condemning al-Qaeda. So he's completely on the outs with al-Qaeda, but he's kind of tough to pin down. I asked him if he's still an Islamist. He said, no, I'm just a Sunni Muslim. I pressed him on jihad. When is jihad legitimate? He says, look, defensive jihad, fighting back against the occupier in Iraq, in Afghanistan, is legitimate. So while he's clearly had a break with al-Qaeda, Michael, it's still kind of tough to gauge where he stands on the ideological spectrum. And is he a guy who still would like to see an Islamic State in Libya? We don't know. We do know he's living quietly in London as we speak.
Thanks for the updates, Eric.
Michael, thanks for having me on again. It's my pleasure always.
I'll be right back. Savage. On MichaelSavage.com, you must read these stories. a district attorney in Brooklyn. You know what that's like, don't you? You can buy a DA in Brooklyn, or you can buy Cracker Jack boxes of candy. This Brooklyn DA cleared Acorn in the videotape scandal. You hear this? The big question on my site, what to do about Rangel, the anti-caucus would go to jail for. Unbelievable how dependent the Dems are on such behavior. It's unbelievable to me. L.A. Mayor Villagrosa considers a carbon surcharge for DWP customers. Now, as you well know, there is no such thing as a carbon situation on Earth. Carbon is good. Carbon is clean. Carbon is wonderful. Carbon is the backbone of all organic molecules. Of course, this falls on deaf ears to people who have a second or third grade knowledge of science. Without carbon, there would be no life. Nevertheless, L.A. Mayor Antonio Villagrosa wants the Department of Water and Power to demand higher bills from people who use too much carbon. Does that include people who drink seltzer? We don't know.
Sounds like a carbon protection racket.
France defends talks on sale of warships to Russia. Now, I didn't know that France could even build a warship. I wouldn't be worried about French shipbuilders selling ships to Russia. Would you, Beowulf?
I don't think so.
I mean, what would it be made of? Old wine bottles?
Yeah, maybe it made out of white flags or something like that.
Also on MichaelSavage.com, Harold Ford says the Democrats are scared heading into this fall's election, but that he decided not to run for the Senate from New York because he feared his party would lose the seat after a tough primary. I don't know if that's true or not. Finally, on MichaelSavage.com, for those of you who still think global warming is real, the chief of the ClimateGate controversy admits sending pretty awful emails to hide his fake data. Looking pale and clasping his shaking hands in front of him, Phil Jones, the disgraced scientist behind the climate fraud, admitted today that he withheld data but said the information was publicly available from American websites. So the fake scientist behind the global warming scam admits that he tried to cover up the facts about the non-existence of global warming, and yet because of the GE-NBC-Obama connection, the global warmists are still at it. Remember what Joseph Goebbels, the propaganda minister for Hitler, said about the big lie? If you tell a big lie enough times, it becomes the truth. That's it from Michael Savage and MichaelSavage.com. John McShane's daughter, Megan McShane, recently attacked conservatives and the Tea Party movement. Boy, is she ever the embodiment of the inner McCain. Listen to this.
There are some things about the Tea Party that have been bugging you.
People were saying that this is the new movement in the Republican Party, and the first I knew, I did not want to go. I have very different, much ideological differences with them, but Congressman Tancredo went on TV, and he was the first opening speaker, and he said that people who could not even spell the word vote or say it in English put a committed socialist ideologue in the White House whose name is Barack Hussein Obama. And then he went on to say that people at the convention should have to pass literacy tests in order to be able to vote in this country, which is the same thing that happened in the 50s to prevent African-Americans from voting. This it's innate racism, and I think it's why young people are turned off by this movement.
This is not the first time that little Megan has demonstrated her liberal inclinations. She's the inner McCain. She is channeling exactly what we all know her father to be.
It can be a party for a 24-year-old pro-sex woman. It can be. I just think that we have people that are in this party that are hijacking it and trying to make it even more extreme.
A pro-sex woman? What? Is anyone listening to the show an anti-sex woman? Yeah, that's just what the Republican Party needs. A party girl. Meanwhile, the far left is trying to say that the real danger to America is from patriot groups. You heard me. Not from Islamo-fascists, but conservatives are the real danger to America. Here is the suspicious Mark Potok from the racist, criminal Southern Poverty Law Center. And I say racist and criminal because I believe they are. It is my personal opinion about the Southern Poverty Law Center that they are, in fact, a criminal enterprise using the law and racism to steal and sue. That's my opinion.
The most astounding growth has come in the so-called patriot groups, the militias that all of us remember from the 1990s. You know, these groups had very largely, if not disappeared, at least gone quiescent. But what we found was 363 new groups in the last year. That's a 244% increase.
What an evil little twerp. And of course, for this twerp, it all comes back to racism.
Am I concerned? Yes, I am concerned. We've seen a great deal of at least attempted domestic terrorism, I think an obvious rise over the last 12 to 18 months. A lot of that has been connected to the essentially the rise to the White House of a black man. There are many people who are angry about that and also angry about the demographic change that definitely is occurring.
But wait till you hear this. George Soros, the man who's been responsible for the destruction of one economy after another, says that capitalism and Ronald Reagan are to blame for the state we're in.
It is effectively a bankruptcy of this market fundamentalist belief, which really came in with Reagan and Thatcher.
And another economic criminal, Obama's friend and union thug Andy Stern, says it's the government's job to redistribute wealth. Communism, anyone?